in the course of this, we've had maybe about 12 to 15 different times that we've talked to wrestlers in the course of our 120 episodes here on the show, where nothing is off topic. This next one's going to be really special. I can only think of one precedent for this, and that was when we talked to George the Animal Steele out of character. Because we talked to a lot of other guys, even when we had on the manager for this gentleman, and actually his tag team partner as well, Jim Cornette. That was fun to do, but I joked with Jim Cornette, and I said to him, I said, you know, when I'm just doing stuff around the house and I want something on the background, sometimes I'll pull up your stuff on YouTube and listen to some of your commentaries, you know. So interviewing Jim Cornette's great, but it's just a different version of what's being done with other people. But to interview this gentleman, and I guess his tag team partner is going to be coming on as well, this is awesome because this is so rare to really get to hear from him, because his big days in the national spotlight, Jim Cornette and later on Paulie Dangerously, did most of the talking in the ring. Of course, he had a very successful regional career prior to that, and we'll be talking about all of that and more with him. But it's a real pleasure to have on the show former NWA World Tag Team Champion and co-holder of many other tag belts as well, the AWA World Tag Team titles as well, and somebody who is one of the great tag team wrestlers of the golden age of tag team wrestling, the man known at that time as Loverboy, Dennis Condrey. Dennis Condrey, welcome to the FDH Lounge, sir. It's a pleasure to have you tonight.
Well, thank you very much. Is this Rick?
Yes, sir.
Rick, how are you doing tonight, buddy?
Fine, thanks. How are you, Dennis?
I'm doing great, thanks.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and again, you know, you really did so much, you know, in those couple of years with the Midnight Express there. It was amazing to me that I really kind of got a feel for your character and what you were trying to get across, and that in a way where you really weren't verbalizing hardly at all. Outside of me, you know, they might show you yelling in the ring at, you know, somebody from the Rock and Roll Express, but you know, not really so much on interviews. So talk about that and how you were trying to get over your character and the things that needed to be understood in a way where you weren't doing the promos.
Well, what it was, Rick, we started out when we first got together, Bobby, Jimmy, and myself, and all of us wanted to say a little bit on the interviews. Well, at the time we got together, the interviews were like, you know, 2.5-3 minutes at the most. And we found out very early in our career that there are certain points that you've got to hit on during that 3-minute interview. And there's a selling point for each thing that we're trying to get across. If all three of us said anything at all, the 3 minutes were gone, and we didn't get that selling point across, like the match we was in, whether it be a cage match or a lose-or-leave-town match or whatever the case may be. If we didn't get the points across, you know, to draw houses, you know, we could all had our turns talking, yes, but the points would not have been taken.
It was amazing, too, because really you and your tag team partner, you both did so much to get your characters across, you know, in those subtle kinds of ways. I've got this book, actually. When we had Jim on the show, he sent a copy of the Midnight Express 25th Anniversary Scrapbook, and it goes through and it talks about some of the ways that you guys got your points across in the ring and other ways as well. We have on tonight, and I want to thank you so much, Dennis, for making this happen. This is a treat to talk to both of you. Your tag team partner from back in the day, beautiful Bobby Eaton, and we weren't sure if we were going to be able to make this happen for tonight, but again, much like what I said in the introduction of Dennis, a real treat, because a wrestler who the fans are very familiar with, but again, didn't get to hear much from on interviews, so this is really a rare kind of treat to be able to get to hear from both of you guys. Bobby, want to welcome you into the show, and thank you for coming on, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have both of you guys on, and I'll direct the question to you that I just directed to Dennis there about as far as what you were thinking back in the day as far as how to get points across with your character and the team, and when what you guys did in terms of body language and everything like that to kind of augment what Jim Cornette was doing with the interviews.
Well, to be honest with you, Dennis and I had known each other before we got together as a team. Him being from Alabama, and I'm from Alabama. Which our point was always to get the good guy over as well as we could, and come back and get some good heat on their butts, you know, and stick a little Cornette in there, and you got a match.
By the way, and speaking of which, with you guys being from Alabama, I have to tell you guys this. that there was a friend of mine that actually made a pretty funny reference earlier in the year here when your old manager Jim when he was approached by the TNA lawyers about the email that he sent to them, and there was some talk of some legal things possibly going down. There was a friend of mine, and he wanted me to mention this on the show tonight, the joke that Jim was going to set up the Midnight Express Legal Defense Fund at 55 Alabama Jam Lane in Birmingham. So
yeah, that's good. I like that.
But yeah, that would. But anyways, yeah, you guys just you did so much good stuff together, and Dennis, it was really something where. With what you guys did in Mid-South, coming along at more or less the same time as the Rock and Roll Express, which, you know, that was almost like the Bizarro World, you know, version of you guys. You know, they were... And they, you know, you guys were really the yin to their yang and vice versa. So, Dennis, what was that like as far as the chemistry that you developed with the Rock and Rolls? And that's really something, I guess, that you guys have shown even in recent years with some reunions.
Actually, yes, Rick, we actually still wrestle those guys today on certain deals. You know, when the money's right, we still get in there. Of course, we don't take those big high bumps like we used to, but we're still taking bumps. They're still taking bumps. I really like it myself, Rick, to go to the Legends reunions, if that's what fans want to call it. And, you know, see the guys and be around the guys. And back in the day, as heels, you weren't allowed by promoters and other people to talk with the fans. And I've really gotten over the last 7, 8, 9 years now, since, you know, there's no more kayfabe, really gotten to really enjoy the fans. I really look forward to seeing them and talking with them and getting their point of view on a lot of stuff. And I've learned a lot of stuff from the fans that back in the day, like I said, you could not get in our space. We couldn't allow that, and we couldn't sign autographs. We couldn't hold babies. And now we can do all that, and I'm having a great time with it. And to go back to answer your question about the chemistry, I don't know if there'll be any more chemistry like the Midnight and the Rock and Roll. I haven't seen it so far. I hope someone does come along and do it again. But it was just one of those things that I guess God was looking after all four of us at the time, or all five of us, if you will. And he gave us a special deal there. It was sort of out of the dark. I mean, we was already the Midnight Express, and we start hearing these stories about these two guys called the Rock and Roll Express. Well, automatically, we're mad right now because they done stole half of our name, the Express. So we could barely wait to meet up with them, and when we did, we was married to them for 20 years, and we're still doing it today.
Oh, it's been absolutely amazing. And I'll tell you what, too, what you said about how it was kayfabe back then and everything, and about how you see your roles now, that's kind of similar. I mentioned to Jim when he was on the show how well you guys played your roles back in the day. I said, Jim, I used to scream at you to get your head taken off by Precious Paul back in the day. That shows how good you were. You know, you were pushing my buttons back then. You know, that's how good you guys were, you know, at firing up the crowd. And, you know, Bobby, you had, after Dennis, you know, a couple more years of working with the Rock and Rolls on and off, that stretched into the early 90s when you were doing the version of it with Stan Lane. So you've had even a little bit more experience in that, Bobby. What was it like again, you know, how you guys came together? And like Dennis said, I mean, the chemistry just off the charts.
Well, like Dennis was saying, you know, years ago, you know, when the people didn't know what was going on, supposedly, talking about chemistry and everything like that with the Rock and Roll Express, it ain't like we were in the same locker room all the time. You know, we didn't talk to them, we didn't go over our matches like that. We had one little simple thing, and we knew what to do. They knew what to do, and as far as with Dennis and I being in the Midnight Express, Dennis and I, we go back a while. You know, and it was. For a solid year in Louisiana, Cornette, him, and me, we would watch each other's back because the police were watching our back. You know, fans were down. You know, Cornette had his back to the people, so they had a chance to put a knife in him, you know, stuff like that. But, I mean, that's just the way chemistry was good.
Well, I'll tell you what, I read that scrapbook cover to cover when Jim sent that to the station, and yeah, the stories in it are absolutely unbelievable. I'd like to get some of the best ones from both of you guys as far as your recollections about that, because again, that back then, I mean, that was heat. what you guys were able to do back then as far as getting people PO'd at you and ready to get a piece of you. I'll start with you, Dennis. What were some of the best stories you remember about riling up crowds?
Well, you know, it was on a nightly basis, to be honest with you, Rick. It was, you know, we didn't have big contracts like the guys do today. You know, they've got the contracts where they don't care if the town's draw or not. We had to get heat. We had to fight our way in and out of buildings. There's a lot of heels that fight their way back from the ring. We had to fight our way to get to the ring. And so, you know, after a few months and years of that stuff, you become real close to each other and everything. And it's a deal where I guess one of my favorite stories is we were in a town in Arkansas. I don't remember the – I know it was 1984. I want to say Little Rock, but I'm not sure on that. But we're doing a deal, and we used to take the tennis racket and take the cover and unzip it, and when we thought we was going to have trouble with the fans, we would put a horseshoe up in our tennis racket and zip it up. And that way, you know, when we came out of the ring, Bobby and I had the belts, and Jimmy had a weapon, so we had three weapons, but we still got 10,000 people wanting to kill us. So one night, we got the people, I mean, the fans were at a fever pitch. And sure enough, we screwed the baby faces, 1, 2, 3, here they come. I'm talking about they came in droves. We were swinging belts. Jimmy was swinging a tennis racket. And instead of the cops actually got mad at us. And instead of the cops spraying the fans with mace, they sprayed me, Bobby, and Jimmy. So we're down, and we're kicking and fighting and punching. And so I told Bobby, let's go. We ran back to the dressing room. They're beating the crap out of us. We ran straight into the shower to turn the shower on with our boots, tights, and everything on, trying to get that mace out of our face. I turned to Bobby and I said, "Where's Jimmy?" And Bobby said, "Dennis, I don't know." I said, "Let's go." Got back out there around the ring. He was laid out in a fetal position. The fans had beat the crap out of him, and the cops were gone.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it wasn't funny at the time, Rick, but now, since he made it out of it alive, it's hilarious. And I think about it quite often. Sometimes I'll be sitting at the dinner table and think about that, and I'll blow food all over my wife. I just can't help it.
Dennis, that's one of the worst combinations in the world. The age of kayfabe and nobody smartening up the cops. I mean, that's...
What? We cussed those cops. It's a wonder they didn't take us to jail. We actually got them back in the dressing room. We drug Jimmy back to the dressing room, got him on his feet. We still can't see. Bobby and I still can't see. And I don't know if you've ever been maced or not,
no.
Rick, but I'm going to tell you something. I've been in a lot of fights in my life and in my career. That is the worst feeling I have ever had because you are truly blind.
Oh.
You can't see nothing.
Oh, God, that's horrible. Yeah, I hope that never happens to me. That is horrible. Bobby, what were some of the ones that jumped out at you? I know there was one that Cornette mentioned in the scrapbook. I think this was the version of the Midnight Express you were doing with Stan, when you were in the Mulkey's hometown. I know there was a riot. I think that was in South Carolina. But what were some of the most outrageous things you remember? There had to be many of them from Mid South to on.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, one of the other things too, talking about getting back from the ring. Jimmy had the racket. Sometimes we had to load it with more than what he usually kept in there. And for some reason, they gave me the racket one night on the way back from the ring, and the people were jumping all over us, and I get the racket. I'm swinging this racket trying to hit the marks, supposedly marks. I hit everybody except them. Hit Grizzly Smith, Dennis, the Corny, so they didn't let me take the tennis racket no more.
that's a lethal weapon in the wrong hands there, you know.
Right.
But that was it had to be kind of weird for both of you guys here, you know, or maybe not, because you know maybe it's just a different adjustment in terms of working style. But the fall of 1988, all of a sudden it's not Condrey and Eaton anymore. It's Condrey versus Eaton when the originals and the news squared off there, Dennis. When you and Randy Rose and Paulie Dangerously invaded Crockett that fall. What a memorable thing that was from that first incident there on TV where Cornette drew blood and everything like that. Dennis, what was it like working against Bobby? And were there a lot of things that you learned from teaming up with him that helped you to maintain that chemistry now that you were on opposite sides?
Sure, yeah. Anytime you work with, at that time would have been Bobby and Stan and me and Randy, we knew that we was going to have just as good a match with those guys as we had with the Rock and Roll. There was no doubt in our mind. And the houses were just sold. I mean, they were full everywhere we went. And in 1980, when I left the Midnights, I went out to Colorado and bought a ranch. I had no idea that I would even ever be back in the business, because at that time, Rick, there's a lot of crap going on. You know, there's talks of selling, and we didn't know if they were selling. We're talking. There was talks of hold on just a minute. My phone just went.
Oh, sure.
Okay. And there was talks of, you know, other people might come and do this, and we might go somewhere else. But, you know, we didn't go in. We didn't go to New York. Like, we was offered a hell of a deal to go to New York. We decided not to do that. That's when I went to Colorado. But to answer your question, I thought settled in Colorado, and I get a call from Dusty Rhodes one day, who was the booker at WCW, and he lived in Dallas, and he said, Dennis Condrey, you need to fly down to Dallas, and we need to talk. I said, well, really, I'm not interested, Dusty. He said, well, what will it take to get you interested? I said, a whole lot of money. He said, come to Dallas, we'll talk about it. So I flew to Dallas from Denver, and we sat down. He said, Dennis, we want to do this deal that we know will draw a lot of money. Unbeknownst to me, I didn't know that the Crockett's were selling out, and I had no idea. And I don't think the Crockett's even knew at that point, but they had got this. Dusty wanted to do this angle in order to save the company, but he didn't tell me that. He just said, Dennis, we can pay you this. He said, well, how much you got to have? And I wrote a figure down that I didn't think they would say yes to, because I really didn't want to go. And I wrote this figure down, handed it to Dusty. He said, no problem, kid. And so I said, damn. But anyway, they told me this, what we were going to do and everything, and it was going to be an eight-week program. Mm-hmm. And at the end of eight weeks, I was going back to my ranch, and they were going to do whatever they needed to do. Well, 4 weeks into the my little deal there, we understand that Dusty gets fired. I said, well, damn, how's this going to turn out? So they brought in this new booker. I forget his name. Bobby probably knows his name. I didn't really pay any attention. I didn't really care. I just wanted
Scott,
to do my other 4 weeks and get the hell out of there. But anyway, it rocked along there pretty good and everything. And sure enough, the houses are coming up. Well, the Crockett's, Jim Crockett comes to us and he says to me, and I think I told Bobby and Jimmy this, he said, Dennis, what is your deal? I said, my deal is I got 4 more weeks. He said, well, can we change that? I said, no. I said, I've got a ranch to run. I said, horses eat 7 days a week. My wife's doing it. I've had to hire 2 little high school boys that come out there and help her after school to help her feed and water and do all that stuff 7 days a week. I can't leave her any longer. I said, I've got to go. He said, well, we want to keep you, Randy Rose, and Paul E. We want to get rid of Bobby, Stan, and Jimmy. I said, oh, no, y'all got to rethink that. I'm not willing to do that because, like I told you, I had to get back to my ranch.
Mm-hmm.
But to make a long story short, we did the 8 weeks. They came up with this deal at the end where it was going to be lose or leave town. Well, I didn't show up for that pay-per-view because that wasn't figured in. Me and Dusty Rhodes didn't talk about a lose or leave town match.
Mm-hmm.
We only talked about 8 weeks, and that was it. So when they come up with this lose or leave town pay-per-view, I didn't show up for it because it was not discussed with me, because if that was the case, I'd got me another $20,000 or $30,000 out of that match.
Sure. Well, in terms of the timeline, Dennis, was this when you talked to Dusty? Because you and Randy and Paulie had put you guys together in the AWA, and you'd done your deal there, and I think you'd also been in Memphis, if I remember correctly. The thing with when you talked to Dusty, was that after you had finished up with the AWA? You were back in Colorado, you said?
That was before I went to AWA.
Oh, okay.
That would have been 88.
Okay.
I didn't go to Vern Gagne to 89 or 90.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, yeah. That was a really fascinating stretch. Bobby, you had, of course, you know, gotten together there with Stan, picked up with the Express, and, you know, really had some great matches over the span of that year and a half before Dennis came back into your life professionally and otherwise there to do the thing with the Express versus Express. So what was your perspective, Bobby, on working with Dennis again, and particularly in light of the experience you'd had as a tag team, and anything that you'd learned about that?
Well, I don't know if you know at the time that Dusty wanted to put that deal together. We'd lost a lot of guys. Well, Crockett had lost a lot of guys to WWE left.
Mm-hmm.
I think Arn and Tully left. A lot of talent left. Territory wasn't doing good, so they was looking for something. to maybe pop it a little bit, you know. But as far as I'm working with Dennis, it's just, like I said, I worked with him, you know, 25 years ago against him.
Mm-hmm.
I work with him now with him. So, I'm just, you know, it's just, everything works for me.
Oh, yeah, because those were some great matches. It was one of the most memorable angles that there had been. Dennis, in terms of the ranch out there in Colorado, curious, like what type it was. Were you breeding racehorses or show horses, or, you know, what type of activity was that you got into?
I wish I was, Rick. The truth of the matter is, it's a boarding stable.
Okay.
It's right outside of Golden, Colorado, and what it is, people in Denver, when they buy their horses, they can't keep them in the city limits. So I'm out in the county, so there's actually three or four more out there within 2 or 3 miles of me, but they stay full all the time. And people, when they buy these horses, you know, they put them out there and they come to see them. That's their kids. They'll come on the way to work, they'll see them horses and rub them down, and they'll come when they get off, and they'll rub them down. They're just like kids. And we charge quite a bit of money per horse per month. Along with that comes, we feed them, we inoculate them, but the winners out there are brutal. I mean, they're really brutal, and I've got two professional cowboys now. One's an old bull rider out of Laramie, Wyoming, that's been with me for about 15 years now, and named John Higgins, and he's been with me for quite a while, and his brother has joined me now, and I use kids out of school. They've got a program in Colorado to help these kids get through school. I use them on the weekend and pay them, you know, the least I can.
Uh-huh.
But it's done very well. You know, the last 2 years I've had to struggle a little bit because I've had people actually walk away from their horses. And with that, I don't get their monthly payments. I've got about 13 or 14 horses now. But I can't let the horse starve. I still have to keep on feeding the horse, even though I'm not getting paid. So
sure.
That's really hurt me the last couple of years, but it's coming back around now. And if good Lord's willing, I hope everything will be fine, because all my money, I bought the ranch in 89. All my money that I've made is in that ranch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. And I can see where that would be a casualty of the economy with some people, you know, falling behind on their payments and everything. Bobby, something I'd like to ask you about, you know, I was talking about earlier when we first talked about how things are a little bit different now with, you know, kayfabe not being the case anymore. You go back to the start of, I've read, you know, after the fact, some newsletters going around, you know, late 80s into the early 90s, really when the, you know, so-called dirt sheets were starting to get out there. And the thing that just strikes me is, you know, there was like a consensus at the time, Bobby Eaton, one of the absolute greatest workers in the world. I mean, you know, the smart marks at the time, if you want to call them that, yeah. They were saying, I mean, this guy's like top five. You could put him in any role. He can have a great match with anybody. So at the time, you know, this was a little bit more of an underground thing in the business than it was now. What was your awareness of some of this talk at the time, you know, and as you did kind of hear about it, what were some of your thoughts and, you know, some of the, I imagine, pride that you were able to take in that?
Well, I mean, that's all flattering, you know, people, you know, saying good things about you, you know. As far as how I took it, I just enjoyed what I was doing all the time, you know. And like I said, it's flattering for the guys to, you know, say nice things about you. I just roll with the flow, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, that's... You know, that was something there at the time. I'd seen that on a number of lists, you know, at the time that as people had that opinion, and you know, it really was one where, you know, it just always struck me too. You know, the kind of you know, versatility that you had, and really going forward into the WCW years, you know, it was a thing where, unfortunately, I mean, you know, as the 90s went along, I mean, you know, you were never quite as front and center as I would have liked to have seen you. But, I mean, some of the stuff you were doing there, I mean, you know, the idea of the tag team with Steve Regal might have been a little bit goofy. But, boy, you guys did some great stuff in the ring together. And, you know, you always seemed to make the most of whatever situation you were in.
Well, I mean, I went from the Midnight Express to the Blue Bloods. So, you know, and I enjoyed the heck out of that during the, you know, little vignettes of him trying to make me proper, you know, how to get my pedicure or whatever. You know, took me to nice places, you know, finest wine, whatever. So, I mean, I enjoyed doing that little gimmick with Steve Regal.
Oh yeah, that was some great stuff back then. Those were enjoyable vignettes, and you got to show your comedic side and you know your versatility in that way. Something I'd like to ask both of you guys about, just because it's kind of a coincidence here on the Sports Talk Network, our sister show on the network, Pro Wrestling Insider. They're striking up a little bit of a relationship with Jim Ross, and I know that he called obviously some of the matches, you know, in the early part of your careers there, and you know that really very influential stage in the Mid-South when you guys were first starting to come together and become the unit that we would see in the years to come. So, Dennis, what were some of your memories of that at the time, and having JR call your matches when he was still kind of working his way up and solidifying what he was going to become, and when you guys were solidifying the tag team you were going to become?
You know, the thing about it is Jim Ross was great from day one. He didn't have to learn; he was a natural. Because he loves wrestling so much. I mean, this guy, what I liked about Jim Ross, he knew the holds. He knew the moves. He knew the reversals, and he knew what to call them. And he would actually, when it sounded like he was getting excited, it wasn't a put on. This guy was really excited. When we was doing stuff, you could hear it in his voice. I've seen him go hoarse at the microphone before and not be able to say a word. I mean, I've seen him go back and spray his throat and do all that stuff. Just simply, he was wonderful. Actually, to be quite honest with you, we can only do so much in the ring, Rick. They had to get it over. We can go out there and we can stand people on their heads and we can pile drive them, we can spike them, we can beat them up. But unless that announcer gets us across as being mean or being bad or being good, we might not get over. It's up to that announcer, and I thought he got us over very well.
Oh, he always does, yeah. I mean, on down the line, you know, and it really tells you something, too. When a guy like Steve Austin, you know, for everything that went on with him and his career, when he credits JR with helping to get him over to the extent that he did, it shows you the power of the announcer. Bobby, that was something that you actually got to experience a couple more years in your career as you went through in WCW. Granted, he was only there through the first part of 93, but that was a couple more years that you were able to get to experience him calling your matches. And I know that, again, he always did such a good job of getting your athleticism across.
Well, you gotta remember where he broke in at. You know, he had the big cowboy Bill Watts. You know, started him out with Leroy McGurk. You know, from Oklahoma. So, I mean, he knew about the business. He loved the business. You know, and there's nothing worse. And I ran into that little problem with WCW, especially when they had the Saturday night show. But the guy calling the matches, they never would. You know, they was. Of course, they were told to do this, but they like never mentioned your name. You know, like if I did a move to Brad Armstrong or something, they would be plugging another match. So Jim Ross, I don't think, would do something like that. You know, take away his trade.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it makes all the difference in the world sometimes who's calling your match. Dennis, I want to ask you something here. I can't take this for granted. I see it on your Wikipedia page. We had an experience when you guys' old coworker Buddy Landell was on the show, and I asked him a question about something on his Wikipedia page, and it turned out not to be true. But according to Wikipedia, Dennis, you have been doing some work as a developmental trainer for WWE for Florida Championship Wrestling. Is that true?
That is true. I had an 8-week contract with them, and I've got another one coming up. They're supposed to be sending it in the mail, actually, John Laurinaitis says.
Okay.
I helped train those NXT guys, those first eight.
Ooh.
Yeah, I helped train those guys, and if you watch real close, you'll see a couple of my little moves in there that some of them got.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a tremendous thing for your resume, Dennis, because, man, these guys, you know, I mean, not all of them are – you know, that raw. Some of them have some experience in the business, but they look polished beyond their years. So, my God, way to go, Dennis. You did a heck of a job with these guys.
Well, I appreciate it, and it was me by myself now.
Yeah.
Tom Pritchard was there, Norman Smiley. You know, they stay there all the time. And what WWE does, and I think is a great ideal, is they bring what they call guest trainers in.
Mm-hmm.
I think Al Snow followed me, and then I think Joe Laurinaitis followed him. And it's Tom and it's Norman Smiley all the time, but they bring in different guys. You know, what I like to call it is different flavors of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
That's 1, 2, 3 different flavors of ice cream. In other words, everything we show those guys is right, but each one of us do it a different way, so that's a different flavor of ice cream. You pick out the flavor you want, and you go with it, because all three of them are right.
Oh, yeah. You know, and that's I didn't know they were doing that to that extent, really utilizing you guys in that type of way. What a tremendous idea on their part, because, you know, it really is, you know, something where you really can learn a lot of things from a lot of different guys, and no doubt that a lot, you know, you got to really love wrestling, I'm sure, and be a historian of it to get in the business. So God knows how many hours of, you know, Midnight Express stuff they've watched that they had to be marking out for, you know, getting to do that with you. But
you know, it was great, Rick. Everything I told those guys was yes, sir, no, sir. I could not make them quit calling me yes, sir, no, sir. Got real close to them. They still call me. I had two phone calls from two of them today. They still call me from advice here at my house, and they're already in WWE. They're already at work, and they still stay in touch with. That speaks volumes to me. I really. And guess who got me the job? We was just talking about him, Mr. Jim Ross.
Really?
Yes.
JR got, no kidding. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I knew he was going to be doing some stuff with FCW also. Oh, that's, I didn't put two and two together on that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Sure did, and I've had a great time. I really love it. I told Jim Ross, I said, Jim, you know, I've got a knack for this stuff. I said, I really, and the thing about it is when you're teaching somebody something, Rick, you can actually see this light bulb go off.
Mm-hmm.
When they really get it, you know, it's sort of like they get hit in the face or somebody slaps them. And you can tell that they got it. Now, not all of them get it, but we've got some real special guys down there. The first eight were special. The second eight were special. Thaddeus still calls me on a regular basis, the big guy from Florida, the Florida Gator, Thaddeus. I had to call him up the other day and tell him about Alabama beating Florida, and he hung up on me. Anyway, I rub it in every chance I get. And the thing about it is, he told me, he said, Dennis, I love Alabama when they're not playing Florida. I said, well, I like Florida when they're not playing Alabama. So we have a neutral ground there that we'll meet on. And I'm talking about just really good, courteous, kind people down there. And these are big guys. These are musclehead guys that are smart. Most of them have gone to college. These are not dummies, and they pick up real quick. Now, Tom taught them some stuff. Norman Smiley taught them some stuff. When I got there, I taught them ring psychology. They didn't have a clue. And so I went there. That's what my 8 weeks was all about. And they told me that when I went there, Dennis, I need 8 heels. So I picked those guys out after I'd been there about a week, and I started working with them, and that's what I came up with.
That's not an easy job, neither, you know, if you want to train somebody right.
Oh, absolutely. Because you've done that too, Bobby. You've done a lot of training yourself.
It's a hard job if you want the guys to learn something, you know, because some of these guys out there trying to break other guys in, you know, they don't know how to work. They don't know how to wrestle. They, you know, show a guy a headlock. They didn't take all his money. But, you know, a guy like Dennis, I can see him calling him every day, you know, picking his head, you know, wanting to know about this and that and the psychology of the business.
Oh, yeah. You know, and there's what a tough business that's got to be to learn, because you've just got to pick up so much by intuition and feel, and how to get your facial expressions to be able to sell things here. And, you know, obviously things with the move set, you got to have the athleticism. There's just so many different elements, you know, and I don't think most people appreciate what goes into it. Gentlemen, the time has gone by so fast here. If we didn't have another segment right on tap here, I'd love to keep going with this. First of all, I'd love to get you guys back on and pick up where we left off. But second of all, we always love to give our guests a chance to get across whatever they want to here at the end of the interview, whether it be any projects you're involved with or anything like that. I'll start with you, Bobby. Anything at all that the people should know about?
Well, they should know when they see Dennis and Cornette and me, you know, at a convention or even the rest of the matches. They're going to get their money's worth. You know, like Dennis was saying, we don't keep flip-flop like we used to, but we can just maybe flip, you know. So we got young guys and stuff, and, you know, it's just a thing that I love, you know. You know, Dennis and I just were together this past weekend, you know, and I just look around at the guys, you know, I got respect for a lot of these guys, you know, even though they may not have been in the business 20 years. It doesn't matter, as long as they respect it and know where they're going with it.
Well, you know what, and whether or not you guys are still doing the same moves you used to, in my mind's eye, Bobby, you will always be on the top rope at the Techwood Drive Studios, hanging onto the rafters before you do the Alabama Jam.
But, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Dennis,
all right.
All right. Goodbye, Bobby. Dennis, anything you'd like to get across here tonight before the end of the show?
Oh, yes. I'd just like to say that I go out of town about every weekend, either wrestling still or either doing seminars or Legends tours. And I have a lot of guys that are really, really interested. And back in the day, you know, there were plenty of places to go, Rick, but now there's not a whole lot of places to go. You can go to TNA or you can go to WWE. But back in the day, we could pick up and go anywhere we wanted to at any time. I want to tell those guys, if anybody's out there listening, don't give up. If you've got a dream and wrestling is in that dream, don't give up on it, because who knows? Anything can happen. And just remember one thing. It's not what you know. It's who you know in our business. It's sort of like the mafia. It's hard to get out of it. It's easy to get in, but it's hard to get out.
Well, it's a fascinating business, and you and your partner and your manager, and it's great that we've had all three of you on now. You guys just did so much, so thank you for all the entertainment you've brought to me, Dennis. Thank you for the entertainment you brought to the audience here tonight with the stories and the insights and everything like that. I mean, it's just a true pleasure, and we'd love to get you back on sometime, and I hope in the course of your travels and in the case of mine, I hope we get to meet up sometime here down the road.
I hope we do too, Rick, and I want to thank you very much for all the kind words. That really means a lot to me. I can tell you know what you're talking about. You're a real wrestling fan. I love those kind of people, but it was a fun and joyful night for me. I hope everybody enjoyed it, and we'll come back anytime you need us.
Oh, thank you, Dennis. Oh, that makes me feel so good to hear that. It was just so much fun. I can't even tell you. Just getting to relive some of the stuff. Thank you so much, Dennis.
You're welcome. Good night, sir.
Good night, Dennis. Dennis Condrey, known as Loverboy Dennis Condrey, back in the day.